Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino.
Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
I found nirvana! I win!
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $365 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Good morning, NBA fans. Today's Thursday, March 26th, the year of our Lord, 2026, 3-26-26. This is Coffee with J.C. Sherbert. Shout out, happy birthday to my cousin, Jonathan Sherbert. He was born on the 26th like I was. And my brother, Jason, was born on May 26th. So he's a member of the 3-26th posse, or the, not 3-26, but the 26 trio. In the Sherbert family, lives in Spartanburg, runs a business. I think the guy is tremendous, one of my heroes. So happy birthday to my cousin Jonathan out there. Wanted to give that shout out first. Gamecock softball last night, lost to Clemson, 8-0, run ruled. It's not looking stellar right now for Ashley Chastain Woodard and her softball program, but the season is young and we'll see if they can turn it around, but so far it's just been a lot of tough losses and things like that. Got to feel bad for that program right now. But like I said, it's can always turn. Brad Muller, the voice of champions, the voice of South Carolina women's basketball and softball, will be on with JB on the morning show coming up. But before they go out, I think it's before they go out to Sacramento. He may be in Sacramento, but Gamecocks playing the Sweet 16 against Oklahoma, 5 o'clock Saturday, ESPN revenge game, all that good stuff to see if they can get to the Elite Eight. The other game is TCU and Virginia. And as Shane Beamer pointed out the other day, there's a lot of storylines there. You got the Oklahoma revenge factor. And then if you bank it to the Elite Eight, it's either Donati's old school and the women's basketball coach that he hired. If you want to kind of look into that, and It's a women's sport, not a men's sport, and he's hiring for a men's sport. But, you know, there was such little turnover, with the exception of Gary Patterson during his time at in football at TCU, that there's not a big track record there. And so you got to, you know, we all are kind of looking around wondering what the process is and all that. So take a look at the Horned Frog women's basketball team. If they beat Virginia, which is Dawn Staley, of course, her alma mater, a 10 seed, they've kind of been upset minded, the rare quote unquote Cinderella in women's basketball, which is normally chalk. Now the men are kind of looking that way as well. So that's what's going on around Gamecock land. You'll have the Georgia series, of course, gets cranked up tomorrow down in Athens in baseball as they return to the diamond to see what happens in league play moving forward. Josh Gunther, I'm pretty sure, will take the mound. And so Carolina have their frontline pitching. Georgia knocks the cover off the ball. But we'll see. Fully field. I think one of their outfields is 314 feet. So there's a reason why South Carolina once upon a time hit 5 straight home runs in that ballpark. But Georgia's got it rolling in baseball. It's not going to be easy. They're 7th in the country in the latest polls. And so we'll see if the Gamecocks can go salvage one and then get back for Wofford in Texas at Founders Park next week after kind of a disappointing loss to North Carolina 9-1 in the midweek. North Carolina's a good team, but they're all going to be good. So you got to start beating some good teams here shortly with a 13-13 record. But that'll happen this weekend. Certainly looking forward to seeing them play. I'm not going to not look forward to seeing them play for the rest of the year now that Paul Maneri's gone. I didn't talk about this yesterday because I was going to kind of leave it to JB, but briefly I'll just tell you what I thought about his comments in the New Orleans paper. It's NOLA.com, New Orleans Times Picayune. I don't even know if they put out a paper anymore. But here's what I think about that. And that's all I got to say about that. I figured he would trash Carolina if he left. And I didn't care. I just wanted him out. Because there was just, I think everybody that knows the game and even people like me that, like the game, could talk about it, but aren't what you'd call experts. I would never say that I know a whole lot about baseball. We have enough baseball experts around Chiefs Sports and inside the Gamecocks to pick up the slack, certainly. But there was no hope with what he was doing. And, to blame the media, the fans, and the he blamed the fans, the media, and then people above Donati. I don't, who knows? It's sad. Sad. Those are sad comments because it's just a dude that's at the end that's lashing out in his passive aggressive way. And he did that to the players while he was here. And he did that to media that was being fair to him. And he just didn't work, man. Sometimes things don't work. I mean, you never know. You think they are, and that's life, right? It's life. Coaches always talk about, hey, this is life. They're teaching life lessons. Well, that's life, man. If just because you're a coach, you're not immune to it. I mean, you can ask people like Will Muschamp about that. He didn't throw everybody under the bus when he was at South Carolina. I mean, and said he didn't win enough. That's how you handle things like that. But anyway, enough about Paul Menieri. Got to talk a little football today. Kind of be a shorter episode of Coffee here because on Thursdays, I'm on with in Tuscaloosa with Wimp and Barry Sanderson, and then also Bill King in Nashville, and then got to get back for the show and some stuff like that. So it won't be your 55-minute JC Sherbert episode today, but wanted to dig into this subject a little bit because it's interesting, and it's not news. It's something that Gerald Kilgore talked about last week, and Shane Beamer talked about in his press conference this week, and it's the tweaks to practice. And I've dug in on it, because I didn't want to just say, oh, yeah, this is what they're doing, and then skip over it. There's a why to everything. And then the other question is, how is this going to help in theory? Because you could try anything you want in practice, and often it doesn't translate to games. That changes team to team sometimes. The coach does something the same way. It works 7 years, and then on the eighth year, it's a disaster. Hey, Paul Menieri, the way he used to do things just no longer worked. And it's because the game's evolving, and at the college level, as long as they continue to hold tight on the eligibility, these are college kids, and different groups of generations that come through change. They learn different ways. Sometimes the chemistry of the team is different. Sometimes you have injuries in football, and you're missing some of your players. Sometimes the other teams are really good. Sometimes your plan schematically is bad, like last year, and it kind of pulls the pin on the whole thing. So there's no guarantee that that this is going to translate, when they take the field. And I think we know that. But why? That's the question. Why? 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 And so I'll go ahead and say what they're doing. So it's instead of going 3 days of practice a week, and then I guess maybe for lack of a better term, doing a little bit of everything, or focusing on, one thing one day and one day the next and one day the next, and then going back and reviewing the next week. And unlike the preseason where you're practicing every day, spring, you spread it out. You're off one day, do this one day. So it's kind of like a Monday, Wednesday, Friday course in college, as opposed to high school, where they brutally make you go every day and follow a bell schedule and stuff like that. I've been talking about that with my stepson. College is a little different. And so, what Beamer mentioned is you have so many new players these days in college football, and South Carolina does have a bunch of them. And in spring now, you have a hunk of those there because of the portal kind of mid-year, and a lot of your freshmen enroll mid-year. So you've got a lot of new in spring these days. And so, last year, I think that it was pretty obvious that with regards to the offense, and I know the play calling left a lot to be desired, but also the execution was bad in a lot of ways, especially up front. And then Lenore Sellers was thinking too much, and there's just all the kinds of issues with that. Well, they rep it and rep it and rep it and rep it and rep it, and then it just still, it just kind of was too complicated. And so it's not that the players can't learn. I mean, there's a lot of smart guys on this team. You look at the academic honor roll and things like that, especially up front. It's that maybe it was number one, too complicated, but that number two, they weren't giving retention a chance. That song, Give Peace a Chance, give retention a chance. And so you may say, and I think a lot of this is skewed towards the offense. Now, Luke Day and Chip Morton, big background in the NFL. Luke Day, of course, the strength coach, has been here for a while. They kind of came up with this plan for Beamer, and according to him, and he's telling the truth, and that, hey, maybe we need to do it this way. And so you may say, well, JC, isn't Kendall Briles' offense simple to learn? Yes, it is. And so it sounds like, well, then if you had a complex offense and all this other stuff, but now you're going simple, why would you change this up? Well, here's why. Because Briles' offense is easy to learn because it's not, a lot of what they do, it isn't so much complex plays. It's pro offenses are designed to be complex, but in many ways they look simple. Even like Ben Johnson with the Bears, who's I think is very imaginative, and like I watched their game with the Bengals this past year, it was nobody was playing defense that day, and then you see it and you're like, oh man, because they're not stopping it, and you're like, oh, this is wild. This is the complexity come doesn't always show on the field in the pro game because everybody's good and it's kind of more of a chess match than super aggressive attacking type of things. Always a chess match at that level. Because if you don't, somebody's gonna pick you off or something. The defenses are too good. They're gonna stop you. That's not the way it is in college, even with a load of NFL talent in the SEC. I guess the Big Ten thinks that too now, so that's fine. But you're not gonna be able to in the pro game, do some things that you can in all levels of college, including the SEC. It's been proven. I mean, look at Tennessee. I mean, they score. I mean, it's not, they don't score against everybody, but they score against, I mean, they take advantage of it. There's no, we're only going to go out here and score, 24 points against a team that can't play defense, because we're dysfunctional. So you look at that, you look at Ole Miss and just how excellent that offense was, and they all have some of these same concepts. But what you have to do in Kendall Briles' offense, and I talked about this too with Lenore Sellers in the RPO game, is the basics of it, the guts of it. You have to have that down second nature. Now, you say, okay, well, that's good. So, what is that exactly? Because the schedule, and I think I got to go back and talk about this because it may not make much sense. So what they're doing now is day one is just working with your position groups, fundamentals, getting it down, learning it on an individual group basis. Day two is kind of like a normal practice where, you're installing things. Now, the carryover from day one to day two to day three within a week is the same. So in other words, you may go, so, and Beamer used the example of inside zone. That's a base run play that's been in the playbook at South Carolina since Eric Wolford got here in 09, and Marcus Lattimore ran it 37 times for 162 yards against Georgia. It's common. Everybody uses it. And it's in this playbook, but there's other power runs and stuff in it. So maybe it's like first down. So you take 6-7 plays, and everybody reps it individually. What do we do on this? Stan Drayton's working with the running backs. You know, Mike Furry's working with the receivers, and boom, 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 boom. And I'm assuming they do some things, some similar stuff on defense, because there's a lot of concepts in Clayton White's defense too that you get in. Okay, so then day two, it's like a normal practice where, you know, okay, you're working, working, working. Then you go team and put it all together. But you're still carrying over what you worked on day one, right? And then on day three, it's basically scrimmaging all day with those plays. And so you get a ton of reps over 3 days with a little slice of the fundamental offense or defense that you need to use. Okay. So, you know, I like that because there's new players, because last year there was a retention situation. There's new players this year. I think that the scheme will take care of that. But then also number three, for this offense to be successful, because it is based on tempo and attacking, and it's completely different than what they were trying to do in previous years. You're just trying to line up, get it going, call the play, go, go, go. Use your speed, use your athleticism, get players in space. And, you know, the pro game I mentioned is one way. The college game, it's supposed to look crazy, but it's real simple. You know, that's the best offenses in college are like that. Everybody from like Gus Malzahn, when he kind of took it by storm at Auburn in those 2 years that they were really good and continued to be good. Eventually they catch up with you, but you know, the Baylor offenses, Tennessee, you know, up there, that was real easy to learn when Josh Heupel got there, but it looks futuristic and wild. It looks wild, right? If you go back to Alabama, I'll point this out. When they kind of went with Lane Kiffin after, I don't remember who it was that left. Was it McElwain or Nussmeier? You know, those types of guys. What Kiffin was running was a lot simpler than what they were running. What Sark was running was a lot simpler to learn and things than what the pro style guys were running at Alabama. But it looked futuristic, right? It looked more modern, and it worked. It can look futuristic and not work too, but that's kind of the idea. And so you have to get your base plays down. In other words, where does the, especially offensive line, because this system, you know, like I've said many times, based out of Stephenville High School in the 90s, you know, an offensive line, you've got assignments on each play. So you got to get lined up, get your assignment. It's nothing crazy and complex and all that. It's basically you go here, you block this guy, let's go. But you have to get that down, right? Because at some point you're going to try to go as fast as possible these days. You can't go as fast as you used to because of the rules, but you're going to try to line up and go. And you have to have that. Like I've mentioned how Lenora Sellers needs to get the RPO game down second nature. This is designed to do that, the basics of it. So then how does it look futuristic? Well, you rep it and rep it and rep it. And then, so you got that part down cold. Well then, okay, here's a wrinkle. We're going to do it out of this formation or that formation. Formations are easier to learn because it's just where you go line up than where you go on a specific play. And you change that up and the defense is confused because you're going fast. And then you got the RPO game and away we go. So that's why I kind of think it's kind of smart to do that. I also think that the individual work on day one, you know, Stan Drayton, according to John Whittle from the bigspur.com and his practice reports, working on some unique ball drills with the running backs, the don't fumble drills. That's good. You get more time to rep that. You get more time. Mike Furry gets more time to coach up guys fundamentally, route running and stuff. Lenore Sellers gets a ton of reps throwing and doing it. Well, the other quarterbacks, the O-line as well. And then on defense, you do the same thing. And so I like that part of it as well. But, you know, getting everything down cold with this offense and then adding on top of that formationally when you kind of start getting into your plan of attack is how you do it. You know who else did this? This style of practice? Now, I don't know about the schedule and all that, because I'm maybe wrong. I mean, I watched a lot of the practices there, but I just, that part of it's not something I was really tracking. I was mostly watching players. But I do remember sitting at many of Steve Spurrier's practices when he was at South Carolina. And you, the base passing plays in that offense. And this is why when he would call them in games and he was locked in, you know, you'd see a guy's just wide open and all that, because they would rep these things over and over. And like for the receivers, if it was supposed to go 9.5 yards, you're going 9.5 yards. You're not going 10. You're not going 9. And over until you get it. And like Alshon Jeffrey, part of the reason he didn't really start until like game 3 of his freshman year is he was working on that part of it. Then he got it, and boom, one of the best receivers in college football. And that was kind of the magic of that, the fun and gun or cock and fire, whatever you want to call it, is that they could run those things in their sleep, those pass plays. And sitting out at those practices, they did it over and over and over and over and over. Same thing. Kind of boring in a lot of ways. But you get it, right? It's college kids. You get it. It's like learning your multiplication tables. And these days, with so many new players, that seems smart to me. And considering that you need to lay that foundation for Briles offense, so when you have your foundation in place, then you can add your bells and whistles. That makes a lot of sense. Whereas, you know, on the surface, you go, well, the more complex it is, the more you should rep it. But if you just rep the basic things, the complexities of it aren't gonna come out. And all that. So this is more of a college style system, and then I guess it's a college style. I mean, Kilgore said it was a mini camp. So maybe they do this in the NFL. I don't know. But I mean, Chip Morton may have gotten it from the NFL. Maybe it's an NFL practice thing, but I think it's smart and applicable to what they're trying to accomplish. And also to eliminate, you know, this team last year, so many penalties and procedural stuff, and it looked like a dumpster fire sometimes, especially up front. You know, just get those guys out there, get them going, let them go play ball. You know, I mean, let them just go play ball. You got Lenore Sellers back there. You got speed at receiver. Let them go play ball, you know, especially on the offensive line too. So I think this is smart what they're doing. To get this base stuff in spring. And then you'll have this foundation. And then over the summer and off season, you know, workouts without the ball or whatever they do, you know, you keep repping it. And then by the time preseason gets here, you have that down. And then you just start adding the bells and whistles. It's a lot easier to do. I would think it would be a lot easier to do it that way. I think in anything, you got to build that foundation. Most coaches will tell you. Not that they weren't. It's just, I think it's just paramount with a new system and the way this system is to make sure, you know, just like I've talked about with the RPOs, like I mentioned, it's paramount to get that second nature. And I saw it when Coach Spurrier was here, you know, that's the thing there. You know, some of the high school coach that I really like and admire that had a great offense, you know, I read his plan for offense one day. It's genius. I thought it was totally applicable to college. Because at the high school level, you know, you got different guys. You also have transition guys graduate, you got freshmen coming in, blah, blah, blah. You don't always have the same guys move outs, move ins, whatever. And you looked at the practice, what they did, you know, and how they were so efficient at running it. They would practice, I mean, 7-on-7 all summer. I mean, everything passing game wise. And the run game was pretty simple. Everything was just repped. Total. I mean, you know, in that system from middle school on up. And I, you know, they'd go down to the elementary school, 5th and 6th grade leagues, and you'd get the 4 base plays, and the coaches would rep it, run it. And, you know, so from the time you're 11 years old, you're in that system, at least a scaled back version of it. And so I think doing it that way and introducing it that way is good. I mean, Shoot, I'm trying to remember first grade. Now, I could read before I got to first grade, so I didn't have to. I could read the newspaper when I was two, and I'm not a genius. It's my mother helped me do that. I was the firstborn, and so she had a lot of time then. But I remember going, and you had a starter book, getting ready to read, was your basic words, and then you had like I believe it was bears, balloons, and boats, and little short stories, and then you went to like sunshine, and then moonbeams. If anybody out there remembers that, holla. I don't. It was in Spartanburg, so I just remember the names of those for some reason. But when you're learning to read, I think any kind of learning process, you start with the fundamentals. And I think that's the case with any system. And sometimes when you have a lot of new and you're depending on 11 people to get on the same page, repping that back to back, just because of the way different people retain different ways. I think repping it back to back on days within a week and getting it down and then moving on in chunks, like focused chunks, I think that could be the name of this, focused chunks. I think is intelligent. Not that if they did it the old way, it would be bad. I practice is practice. As long as it works, that's my opinion. But just kind of digging into it, asking people about it, and then thinking back to my own experience when I would watch Coach Spurrier's practices and just how much they repped these pass plays, steamers, mills, all that. I mean, we had G.A. Mangus on yesterday on the morning show, and you can ask him over and over and over to the point of insanity. There were some practices where, maybe they were a little concerned about injuries, and that's all they do. Defense would be over on the other field. And it worked, right? It worked. Very rarely in a game when Steve Spurrier was coaching, no matter how good or bad it was. I mean, most of the time when his offense wasn't moving the ball, it was because of pressure on the quarterback and the fact, or they couldn't run it, those types of things. But very rarely did you see when they had protection, no matter who the quarterback was. Very rarely was it like, oh, well, they don't, there's miscues and missed assignments. I mean, it's a thing of beauty. And then there's a reason for that. There's a reason for that. Not to say that, like I said, that the old way that Beamer had done it before, that you can't get that down. But I just think this makes sense for this team, for modern college football with the roster situation, and also for this scheme with a number of new players there. So I like that. I really do. Just a couple of more notes. Beamer's presser, he did mention Jason Smith and Randy Clements, the two offensive line coaches. Randy Clements is the offensive line coach, and then they call him Smooth. Jason Smith was an All-American offensive lineman at Baylor. I keep hearing really good things about him out of the program. Clements mentioned him in his press conference as well. One thing that was refreshing to me to hear is that Beamer said these guys are high energy and intense. I'm not saying Lonnie Teasley and Gray Atkins were not. I'm just saying that you got a new group. You've got a renewed emphasis on physicality, which is another thing that's kind of a weird deal compared to last year, because last year they wanted a big beefy offensive line that could run power against teams, which you would think would require you to be physical and tough, and it just didn't look that way most of the year. And now you're going to kind of more modern college style offense, a lot of spread, all that good stuff, tempo. But there's an emphasis on physicality. And if you look back at Baylor and Art Briles' teams on the offensive line, they weren't always like these, all-American looking dudes, but they would hit you, and they were tough, and they knew their assignments, and they were athletic enough to line up and get it going. And so I think constant intensity and enthusiasm and just let's go get it, let's attack the day and go, 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 go is good for this group. And there's a lot of guys in this group that may or may not be the most athletic offensive linemen out there. But just about all of them, when they were evaluating them, they had some sort of edge, some sort of toughness, that kind of thing. And look, man, I'm going to say this. I say it all the time. Offensive line in the SEC is going to be a mixed bag. I don't care how good you are. I don't care who your coach is. It doesn't matter. You know, you're going to get your butt whipped on some plays because the defensive lines are too good. Now, there is a difference between that reality and what we've seen on the field for the last 2 years. You know, 2024, you could kind of say, well, you know, they were okay. At least they won. But looking back on it, I mean, you had some players that were really good players that would just on a given play freeze and not know what to do. You know, and I think Dowell Loggins with some of his calls and Lenore Sellers a lot and Rocket Sanders sometimes helped them out of it a little bit. Right. But they were just the last 2 years, you haven't seen, you can't say that it's, oh, just normal SEC. It was far worse than it should have been, far worse. So, you know, getting back to that reality is important. I will take toughness and physicality. I could think if they can have toughness and physicality, then they're going to be okay with it. It's not going to be a liability. Because, you know, I talked about how last year the offensive plan, scheme, execution, whatever you want to call the offense was the slow leak in the vessel that turned into a full-blown hole and sunk the ship. Offensive line, if it's bad this year, people, if it's just overwhelmed, then it doesn't matter how fast you go. In fact, you're better off going slow because, you know, you're going to have a 13-second drive and your defense is going to be right back on the field and they're going to get drug all over the place. So this group has to get at least to the point of a realistic SEC offensive line. And I think that if I'm wanting to get there, based on what's failed, I'm wanting toughness and physicality. And a bunch of guys, like Kendall Brown said, the baddest dudes on the team. It's a thankless position in today's college athletic world where you have players that are, believe their value to a team is extremely high based on social media followers and highlight clips. I think that offensive line, no matter how good you are, it's thankless. You don't get to, because if you're doing your job, nobody talks about you. It's when you're not. So it's a thankless position. It's tough. And you've got to love it and get out there and just love competing. And am I about to use a Muschampism? Yes, I am. Stick your face in the fan and like it. And I think individually, South Carolina's had tough guys. But you got to get that collective toughness. You got to go out there and try to whip somebody's ass. All of you. Five of you. And I will go to battle with that. I will take that as an acceptable, no matter how much, you know, you blow a block at left tackle, you know, somebody sacks Lenora Sellers, you get thrown for a loss because a D tackle beats you 1-on-1. But you're right back there ready to go to war. I'll take that over what we've seen. And I think Randy Clements and Jason Smith combined are helping to install that along with the mentality that they believe they have in the evaluation process. That's the hardest part of evaluation is mentality. Cause you just don't know when a guy gets in a game, he gets in the, you know, another Muschamp is in the arena, you know, when they're in the arena, it's a different world, especially in the SEC. So, you know, but they did put a premium on that in recruiting many of these offensive linemen. So, and Beamer did say they're moving a lot of people around. He did kind of confirm Carter Miller is the center. And then Kojo Poku has been inside most of the time. That was, you know, because there was some question about could he play left tackle a little bit. But, you know, and I think those two guys, honestly, along with Surratt, if I had to project a starting group right now, I would those would be on my projected starting group. Just an opinion there. One more offensive line note. We're going to get out of here. Class of 2026, seven offensive linemen. Will Edicott, is it Edicott, Edicott, God. I had it written down, then I crossed something out, and now I'm confused. So, Will Edicott from Prosper, Texas, 6'4", 286, has set an official visit for the first weekend in June. South Carolina is the leader for him coming out of his spring visit, which was last weekend. Prosper is in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, kind of an affluent community. But went and watched his film. He's one of these offensive linemen from Texas that's, you know, one of dozens in the state, D1 guy all the way, probably lost in the shuffle a little bit recruiting-wise, three-star guy. But what he has is this bull on film, it comes out bulldog mentality. Like every play, he's looking for contact and physicality. I don't know how athletic he is. Don't know what he runs the shuttle in. He's got a good frame. Decent body for maybe an interior guy, not a lot of tackle stuff. So I don't know what his, you know, pass pro feet look like. As far as on the edge at guard, it's fine, but I like him. And I think, again, if you're going to recruit, you need to recruit for athletic upside. I mean, I'm sorry. You need to recruit for toughness along with the athletic upside, but on the offensive line, let's take it in another direction around here. You know, Carolina's had all the blue chip guys, and many of them have just been woefully disappointing, and very few have played with the edge required. You know, is that coaching? Is that the players? I don't know. We'll find out. You know, most of these guys are at other power schools. You know, I think Cason Henry played with an edge every time. He just couldn't stay healthy. So we'll see what happens, but Will Edicott from Prosper, Texas, sets his official visit. Not like where the Gamecocks stand for him, and I like him on film. Like him on film. All right, morning show, the voice of champions, the two Matts, Matt Anderson, Matt Smith, are in with Jamie Bradford. Only 1 hour on the show today. I have a conference call that non-negotiable time at 1 p.m. I'm looking forward to that, but Alex Jones will be with us just about the whole hour of the show for the Gamecock Smorgasbord Sports Talk streams tonight, four quarter Friday tomorrow morning. So check that out on the Chief Sports Network. It's been Coffee with JC Sherbert. I'm out. Holla.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win, like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.